Hi, this is Martina Castiglioni, and this is a podcast by Webster Humanitarian Association. I am the president of the association, which is a student-led NGO established at Webster University Geneva to advocate for the defense of human rights. Today I'm here with two other members of the association, Alejandra and Kelly, and together we have the unique opportunity to interview the popular contemporary painter Rodrigo Hombre Radical Figueredo on the topic art and human rights. Thank you for being with us today, Rodrigo.
And thank you for inviting me.
Yesterday you gave a very inspiring presentation at the Meet the Artist lecture. The room was packed. And today we're interested in knowing something more about your life as a human rights activist. Mm-hmm. So Rodrigo, you're originally from Venezuela, but you left the country when you were only 14 because of political tensions with the government. You came to Geneva, where you lived until 2013. Mm-hmm. So you should say welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, it's always good.
And then you moved to a rather remote region in the south of Italy.
Yes.
Called Basilicata, right?
Exactly.
So you have a very multicultural background and education. Since a very young age, creativity was a major component of your life. You painted and you also recorded music. But what really sparked public attention and gave you today's popularity as a contemporary artist and human rights militant, it's your painting Battaglia, mm-hmm. right? Representing student protests in...
Of 2014 in Venezuela.
In Venezuela, right. This painting, I should say, it got published by the BBC as one of the most representative drawings of
2014,
yeah. Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was. It made me really proud. Yes, but more so than that, it was something that humbles you, and the fact that your work gets recognition. But overall, that it's recognized as something that puts eye and attention in the cause that you're militing for. So that was the best part of it.
And was it then, was it the moment when you actually realized that you wanted to take the direction of activism? Was it the
Well,
2014?
I was already, I moved to the south of Italy 4 years ago. And with the idea of developing my my project, which was and has always been to live from what I create and do. So I couldn't implement it in Switzerland. So I went to the south of Italy because it gave me a set of conditions that made it possible for me to develop my project, which was always to be an artist. And I realized that... all that I did in my life and the path I walked through and the education I had, for instance, I studied political sciences in the University of Lausanne and got a master from it. It was the alignment of stars, to put it in a way, or the alignment of conditions, moments, and in life individually and also as part of a group or dynamic were perfect, and it was obvious that was the path that I had to, that was the path where I could give the best of me and the path I wanted to follow.
So it was when you actually went to Italy that you realized that you would dedicate your whole life?
Yes and no, because, simply, to answer your question, simply yes, but it was also the fact I could have painted Battaglia, and Battaglia didn't, it could have been possible that it went unseen, that it went didn't get buzz or didn't get recognition. But painting Battaglia, being who I am, studying what I studied, knowing what I know, living and suffering what I suffered, and then suddenly making Battaglia, it's that piece also opened doors to me. I got, for instance, the first time I understand that it's going to be big, I see the Anonymous Venezuela Twitter account retweeted it. And I saw, wow, they have a million or so followers. I didn't know who they were. But
I'm becoming
since
famous.
That started a snowball that got big. Mm-hmm. And then I suddenly started to be co-opted and considered credible and legitimate to relate in the struggle itself for the Venezuelan recuperation of democracy. So it's a superposition of different conditions, and that actually made it obvious that that was the path for me.
Mm-hmm. I see. About what you said before, what I personally find interesting is that you became very popular in a very short amount of time, thanks to the social media, basically. And these are crucial in your everyday work.
Absolutely.
As a human rights defender.
Why and how?
Exactly.
Okay. I produced music for 16 years before that. And in doing so, I was one of the first generations to be able to grasp and use fully the new technologies of communication, social networks. So I had a prior experience, a very broad experience, that when I applied the methodology and the know-how I had collected during those 16 years of audio and musical audiovisual production, when I applied it to plastic sciences, so paintings, well, it went really fast because I already knew how to do it. So I just applied the methodology that I already know to the art pieces, and that made it really fast. But it made it really
well.
Fast also in the sense that I was really pertinent. Mm-hmm. Or even Batalla, to go back to that piece, at that time, I was the only artist to have the balls to do that, because most of the artists in Venezuela, they would never touch a subject like that for fear of losing people who would buy their pieces or recrimination from the states. So much that it's the fact that I paint what I paint, that I know how to use the social networks that, like I use them, that made me a year or 2 years afterwards be named by the second of the regime as one of the most important influencers abroad that they would like to imprison. And that obviously adds up to the snowball and credibility. Once, well, so if you're one of the top research influencers, must be mean that you're doing something right. So that would incite people. And as you were saying, so I use my art with social networks. I use my social networks with my art. It's a 360 degrees thing. They're all linked. I first was more known. Actually, I was more known and credible and legitimized by virality in social networks, and then called by institutional and high-grade galleries. That the other way around. So it's a novelty of the times.
Absolutely. And yesterday you mentioned two words that sticked to my mind: identity and empathy.
Yeah.
So these two words have come up many times during presentation.
Yeah, I think I use identity a lot.
Mm-hmm. But empathy as well.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that they represent a sort of mantra in your work.
Mm-hmm.
What do they actually represent to you as a human rights activist? And how do you communicate?
Well, if it's to take the case of Venezuela, the regime will work on your identity. For instance, they would sell you the idea of free education. So free education, as per se, sounds beautiful. I mean, who could criticize the idea of free education? Now, the reality is that when they offer you, or they give you as a gift, a book to study Venezuelan history, you will open the book and the image of Hugo Chavez will be huge and cover one page, and the image of Simon Bolivar will be all small at the third page. So this line comes from a friend of mine from Anonymous Argentina, and he said something to me that really influenced me, is that you have to have the control of the storytelling, the control of the story. el control del relato en español. So identity is story. If I didn't paint batalla, batalla represents an identity. So this is what the Venezuelan people is undergoing. This is what the Venezuelan people are, a part of the Venezuelan people. And if that didn't exist, that identity would not exist. Even though it exists, but it would not be represented. And the more you represent, the more you realize. I'm gonna take, for instance, I'll give you an example. This is pretty ugly example, but the thing is that he's the guy who did it. During the Second World War, Goebbels was the Hitler's propaganda expert.
Official, yeah.
And he would say, if you repeat a lie many times, it ends up being reality. And that is the storytelling. So they controlled at that time the storytelling. So batalla is an act of resistance of one identity or what is to be Venezuelan. I also said yesterday, I talked about the fact that now we're a diaspora, and from 30 million of Venezuelans, more than 4 million are abroad. That also changes what criteria you use as if to set up what identity means. What does it mean to be Venezuelan? I lived in Venezuela until I was 14 years old. I lived in Switzerland for 16, then a year in the US, then 4 years in Italy. For Italians, I will never be Italian. I'm Venezuelan. For some Venezuelans, I will never be Venezuelan. I'm European, Swiss or something. I don't know how much I can say I'm a Vaudois, mais je parle très bien comme un Vaudois. Identity is important. And if you deny identity, well, you're violating human rights. Because the humans have, per se, the right to exist as I choose to be an artist, I choose to be a left wing, I choose to play piano, I choose to be gay, I choose to whatever that.
We have the right to choose our identity.
You have the right to your own identity and not to be imposed a certain way of being. And so art obviously plays with that. To the word empathy, well, if I did not have empathy for others or for what others are, but I wouldn't do that. So I wouldn't paint it. I would paint a portrait of the girl I want to be with, or I would paint something that I'm sure will be sold, easily commercial, because doing that also have costs. In fact, doing human rights militancy in the world we're living today is a very costly identity to assume.
How's that?
Then again, I'm using the Venezuelan example, but you can extrapolate. The regime obviously hates my paintings because they express and stand for an identity they want to suppress. But official opposition or formal opposition doesn't like that either, because today it's they're part of the statu quo of what is. So when you're doing human rights, you need to be coherent, honest, transparent, because if you are not that, then you will never be credible. People will turn it against you if you're not coherent. To be coherent, it bears costs in the sense that if I accepted, for instance, being financed by Republicans from the US, they love us, yeah, because the enemy of our enemy is my friend.
My best friend.
Then I would have to express a certain line, which is not exactly, it could coincide, but it's not, it's, I'm not, I wouldn't be free. And being free today is very expensive. Because if you work for somebody, then you're not free. So you're not in the sense of a slave, but in the sense that you have a direction.
Hi, so my name is Alejandra, and I was working also with Martina with Killinoy. So I also had a question after everything that Martina asked, having to do more with your personal life and your beliefs towards it with Venezuela. So before this question, does your family, or do you still have family or friends in Venezuela?
My nuclear family is outside. Indirect family is still there. Concerning the political activism, I have to... Well, my family there, who that's not direct family, they tend to, because they live there, to not be putting that out too much, because they could suffer consequences from it. But my direct family, none of my direct family can go to Venezuela, because if my brother works here in Geneva, and if he would go to Venezuela, he would be under some type of potential danger because of me. Me specifically, obviously, I cannot go.
Yeah. So your family, the indirect family that lives in Venezuela, doesn't really support that much your work just because of that kind of danger?
In a private expression of what they support or not, they obviously like what I do, but they will not acknowledge it or say it openly. I even had cases of some of my family who, when I got name dropped by Diosdado Cabello, who was the second of the regime, as one of the most researched influences outside of the country, some of the people in my family, they actually even took me out of Facebook and stuff like that. They took away the friendship. It's complex life, because sometimes you have to concede and do some exchanges with people that go against your criteria, because life is like that.
But for example, your family that is outside of Venezuela, would they agree with what you're saying right now? Like, they would agree with your work but not express it as much?
Yeah. Same not thing. All, and some of them are super proud. And yes. At the end of the day, thing is, this is a vocational thing, and what sometimes they don't understand in a personal manner is that in order to do what I do, there are a lot of sacrifices involved. Not a regular job, not a regular family. It's funny what I'm gonna say, but me, I'm a gypsy. I move around and I go where I have to go in order, because I underput my life in for the objective. But I'm pretty. I also see with some eyes of not envy, but saying like, wow. I mean, the house, the lawn, the mom, I mean, the house, the lawn, the married woman, the dog and the kids, that's something that it's also, you always want what you don't have.
Yes. So,
and the normal job and the pension and stuff like that. But I chose this, and it's funny and it's very paradoxical, because I'm not alone. I have tens of thousands of followers in social networks, and I know people, and I interact with a lot of people when I move around, but it's a very lonely thing too at the same time.
Of course, I can imagine. So if you moved when you were 14 from Venezuela, would you have liked to stay a little bit longer in Venezuela?
I would have loved not to ever
leave. To be raised more than there?
I would have loved not to ever leave. But leaving also made me what I am today in front of you. Because that situation was, let's put it in simple words, like a trauma that sets you up in a certain direction of evolution in life and character.
So taking that into account, what would you recommend the young people from Venezuela to do right now?
In Venezuela?
Yes. To express themselves as you have, or to keep it more to themselves, or
No, it would be it's very dangerous to express yourself in Venezuela.
Yes.
You just need to show that you have a minimum of leadership, and they're on your case. I mean, those who have the minimum of leadership are either exiled, in prison, or hiding.
Yeah.
Now, the young kids of Venezuela today, if we're talking kids of your generation,
yes,
20-year-olds, there's also a paradox there that these kids, they never knew democracy. They were born, raised, and lived in the authoritarian context. And these are the frontline kids. And paradoxically, my generations, I'm 40, or the upper generations, are the ones who are more willing to close an eye and go along. And because they are more practical. So what would I... To dream. That's what I would tell them. Dream. And you can dream in your head or dream outspoken, depending on the context. I mean, don't dream outspoken in front of the political police, dude.
Of course.
But dream. And when you find a way to implement your dream, find the way to do it and do it with others, not by yourself.
Yeah, that's very inspirational. Thank you for saying that.
Thank you for your time and questions.
I'm Kili Noy, and I'm just going to... My questions are more focused on just specific aspects of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a little detached, but I would like to know, first of all, what, if you look back, do you have a proudest moment that sticks in your head? Or if not, what would you say like makes you... prouder, like being recognized by these high-end companies like BBC, or just being admired by people like normal everyday activists?
Both. And because they both give you a different added value. How can I explain to you? Okay, one of the pieces I made 3 years ago in the south of Italy was, I talked about it in the presentation, it was called San Januario, and I took that representation of a particular cultural expression, and made it with my know-how or type of style. Contemporary modern. They asked me for the piece to be shown at the central bar of the town. It's a little town, very conservative, very in the middle of the deep Italy, and that was something that made me as proud as when I got invited by Nina Torres, who's one of the biggest curators in Miami, to her gallery. I'm very proud when the secretary of the organization of American States, the secretary of the OEA, Luis Almagro, I met in Geneva, and he signed one of my pieces in the back, and that piece that he signed in the back is being signed by some of the most important militants, big or small, but those who are those who count. Or lobbies in Italy that send medicine to Venezuela, the people who send the most medicine to Venezuela. And that is something that it's not necessarily public, but it makes me very proud. And obviously, if BBC says that one of my pieces is considered to be one of the 10 most representative of a year, that is very, very... but you know what? I would get more proud of that in a way, but a human thing would make me more humble. I mean, when it's a human person. I mean, when I saw these kids, they sent me the photographs. They were tattooing my pieces on their arms, or when I made a piece about the Kurdistan girls during the Kobane siege, and being written from Kobane during the Kobane siege, that's very humbling.
Yeah, that's exactly why I asked like those two different approaches, because they seem like to have, like you said, like their own added value. Back to the first thing I asked, but do you have a moment in your life that stands out as the one that you're just the most proud of, or there are just too many for you to choose from?
I mean, it's a luxury to say that that I got a few. I met last year the ex Chavista procurator, the general procurator that escaped Venezuela, and she had put into jail friends of mine, and she committed a lot of human rights violations and crimes of lesa humanidad. And she went rogue, or she rebelled against Chavism and escaped with all the files to have the proof of who took what and who stole what and who did what. And I met her last year. And via the lobbies of Venezuelans, they told me, go there, she's going to be there. And I went with a copy of Batalla. And when I went to meet her, we started talking, and I told her, "Well, I'm one of the most representative leaders of the Resistencia and the radical movement, and I wanted to show you this." So I opened up the piece and I showed her, "Well, this guy you put in jail, this girl you put it in jail, she's dead." And I made her cry. Then I cried, and then she gave me a hug. And I got the contact with her, and she is now one of the most cutting-edge actors in the struggle to recuperate the democracy and the republic. So me, I'm not a judge, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not the one who has to decide to judge or to give amnesties or to a person. But that was a high moment. Because you have in front exactly what you're fighting against, and in a rational way, an irrational way. Because how come I can be in a hug with this woman who have put in jail friends of mine and killed others? So that was an important one. But it's beautiful also, more simple things about life. When I went to Miami in 2015, and I was really poor, I was moving like a gypsy, and I went to Miami for 40 days with $1,000. Imagine, in no car, so that's something to consider. I got like a street cred, like 3 stars. And I slept maybe in 25 sofas from different people, and people would come and pick me up and take me from Weston to South Beach, 2 hours of car. And, okay, tonight I'm going to sleep at this person's. That nobody would make me pay anything. And they would just feeling proud of helping me. They felt as if they were being part of. And that was very humbling, because it's people I didn't even know. It's just regular people that they just want to. So that's also as beautiful as what I told you before.
That first answer I was definitely not expecting, so thank you for that. And so my last question, a bit off topic, but because you did not really discuss it yesterday, but I'm just very curious. You can answer as briefly as you want, but how do you use your music to promote human rights? Because I would love to know.
Not that much, actually, because in 2009, I was the first rapper. Like, the first of the things, because I take the courage to do it. I was the first rapper to do an anti-Chavista rap in 2009. Thing is, I haven't been doing rap for like 3 or 4 years. I haven't been producing music. But at that time, it was... something that musicians, like the same example I gave before about the art, not a lot of artists took into themselves the risk of drawing that reality and that identity. Well, at that time, Chavez was even alive. So it was something that nobody would ever take. A rapper from Venezuela would never do that because it would be an harakiri, would be a suicide in the sense of, well, it's the state who gives, who employs them more. So if you do a rap against, then you will not be employed anymore. Me living abroad, I could give myself the luxury of doing that. And so that was an example where I did that song, and that song was utterly viral. And that, no, so that was a precursor sign or experience that made me understand something that I use now as a methodology to use my art for the cause or my cause for the art. It goes both ways. So it's the same as a painting, actually. It's your capacity of exposing and viralizing your message, and what form do you use, if it's more adequate to use a song or a meme or an image or a specific way of doing it or a specific way of sharing it, or which social network you use. I'm into Twitter. I use Instagram very little. Facebook, I would never do opinions on Facebook. I understood that you should not. And that's not the place for it. So it's a set of different skills and ways to ask to act.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I'm very happy with your answers.
I'm very happy with your questions.
Rodrigo, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor. We wish you all the best for your future work.
Thank you, and to you for your education and come up in life.
Thank you so much. This was a podcast by Webster Humanitarian Association. Thank you for listening to us. You can find out more about us on Facebook at Webster Humanitarian Association. To know more about Rodrigo's art, visit his website, rodrigofiguredo.com. You can also find him on Facebook as Rodrigo Hombre Radical Figueredo, or follow him on Twitter at Hombre Radical.
With a K.
With a K. Grazie.
Gracias.